Foot during those 3 days because it got so much water. And then I guess Papa went somewhere to work, didn't he?
Then Papa, on the 25th, when he got up, he was cutting fence posts for some people up on the flat tops. That was kind of northeast of Blue Water, about 10 miles. And he went up there and he stayed there at night. Because it took him so much time to go back and forth. So this night, he stayed there the 25th and the 26th, and the next morning on the 27th.
Now, in my words, he'd be up beyond the crater of the haystack, which most people are acquainted with down there.
It's just right the foot of it.
I said, okay.
And so the next morning on the 27th, he was still up there cutting fence posts. And us kids would help Mama do the chores, of course, when Papa was gone. But this morning, Mama didn't feel very good. And so Wilford helped us get the morning chores done. And then he went after Mama sent him after Papa. I thought it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but he says it was around about 11 in the morning that he left the house there, because it was so far out there on a horse. He had to go horseback, and the trail wasn't very good, and if you went down around the road, it'd take you all day. And anyway, it was just through a wagon. There wasn't any cars those days or anything. But he rode his horse and went up there, and as he was going, it was still raining on him. And as he went by, well, he saw somebody in a distance. But he was there so far away that he didn't recognize Papa. But Papa had had a feeling that morning when he got up that he was needed at his home there in Blue Water. So after Wilford left, why, Clifford and I, Mama, we went about doing the little chores that had to be done in the house and around about way. But Mama was awfully sick and miserable. And so we went down, got Doris and Grandma. It's Doris is Mama's baby sister, and Grandma was Mama's mother. And she was an awfully good midwife. And President Brigham Young had told Grandma that if she would go out among all the people, regardless of what nationality they were, that she would be blessed as long as she didn't charge any money for the work she was doing, that she would never lose a baby or a mother. And after this time, well, up until her death, she had never lost one baby or one mother. She had taken care of them for good. And those days, we didn't have doctors like they do now. So there, you had to go to their home and take a nurse with you, and the two of you deliver the baby. And so we had Mama there and Grandma. I went down and got Grandma.
Okay. Maybe this would be a good time to tell what you told me yesterday about the chores that had to be done and who did them and everything like that.
I did.
Oh, did you just now?
Uh-huh.
I missed it.
I said Clifford. It was Clifford and I helping Mama.
Uh-huh.
Do the chores, the little chores around the house and around outside that Wilford and I hadn't done.
Okay. Then, about when did her labor pains begin?
Well, they started in the morning, but they weren't very strong. And that made her feel bad, kind of sick and bad, and the pain, bad stomach.
Did she go to bed?
No, Mama didn't go to bed. She stayed up.
And
as long as she could stand it.
She helped with the chores, too.
And she helped with the chores. And then when it started to get late and the pains got worse on her, we'd already had Grandma Doris there. And when her pains got a little worse, why, then she sent me after Bertie Chapman. I was going to be play nurse for Grandma. And so I went down around the place, out in the street, and
down. They'd be going south, and then you went south, and then
south
down the corner,
and
turned west. Uh-huh. To go to Bertha Chapman's house.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And only was, and the water van was only up to our ankles. And I'll go back now and tell about the day when it got about 10 o'clock. Why, we could see that there's going to be a flood because the water was it was raining and had rained all morning on the watershed. And we knew that they would be, and that's why Mama sent Wilford after Papa.
Now then, what was the condition of the earth, the soil?
The earth was wet, and everything, but it couldn't hold very much water. It rained. When it was raining, it would come down off the mountain as fast as the rain fell.
And you and Aunt Bertha then, you went to Aunt Bertha while the flood was just starting.
Yeah.
About ankle deep.
When that was ankle deep and I was after Bertha Chapman, the flood was just starting to come down. Just about dark.
Uh-huh.
And so when we come back, it was halfway up to our knees because the water was raging fast. And so we hurried down. And she couldn't hurry very fast because she's quite short, short-legged and kind of fat. But the water had already started down to the churchyard and into where our garden was and down into the corral. It was about 400 dark van. But we went in and Mama Van was really sick. She had the pains terrible. And we sent Clifford and Raymond to bed because we didn't want them getting in under our feet and around about. So they went to bed. It was just... It was after dark by this time, and then we discovered Mama, she laid down, and the baby started to come, and we discovered at this moment that the baby was coming through, and we knew then we were in trouble, and I was too little to do a lot of work, too young, but Doris slipped down, and Mama held on to her, and Doris held her hands and her arms, and I run little odd jobs of getting...
Go ahead, I kicked your foot.
Oh.
I didn't mean to. Go ahead with your story.
And I would do a little job such as getting a rag when they needed it, or getting a wet rag and like that, because Mama was in such pain that the water would just run off in her head face, and she just swept. Terrible, so we always tried to keep a cold, wet rag to wipe her forehead with and to kind of keep her cool as we could.
What part of his body came first?
And in a breech first like that, they come double, and the hind end comes out first, and their head comes in different positions. Sometimes they come down between the legs, and sometimes the legs are doubled around his neck. But this happened to be that his head was between his legs. So it wasn't as bad as some breech burst that I had heard of. And but it took a long time to get him. And Bertie and Grandma worked awfully hard. And Mama worked with them to pushing down as hard as she could. And Grandma and Bertie trying to work to get the baby. And finally they got the little fellow, and it was a little boy. It didn't matter to us whether it was a boy or a girl. We were thrilled to death to get him. He was such a cute little fellow. And it was still raining outside, and the flood was coming down higher, more and more. And it came down through the corral, and the woodpile, and down and through Mama's flower garden and onto the porch. And it lasted about a half inch of coming into the house. All it saved it was a little tiny step under the door.
We call it threshold.
Yeah, we call it a threshold.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, by this time, we had the baby, and Mama, and we had put Mama to bed. And she was shivering and shaking.
This is about 8:30 or 9 o'clock. Or...
Yeah, 8:39.
Uh-huh.
And Mama, she'd stopped sweating, but she was chilling. her to keep her warm so she wouldn't chill and get pneumonia. Grandma took care of the babies, and she sure did howl. She didn't like it, because my grandmother was trying to wash him off and work with him. So finally we got
him. He was a healthy baby, and he was really well, huh?
Yeah, he was a very, very healthy baby. And even though he was a screech burst, it didn't hurt him at all. He was strong and healthy.
Now, Papa got home about this time.
And when we got the baby all dressed and ready and Mama all warmed up nice and in bed, well, Papa came. And he said if he'd come across the street, he had to kind of go catacornered.
Had to go from this bridge across the bridge.
There was a bridge across the street.
By the southeast corner of our lot, across the road from it.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And then he had to kind of
go angling up.
Angle up the street a little bit.
To the corral gate.
Uh-huh. And the water was so deep that he had to take his feet out of the stirrups, even though he was riding a horse that was quite tall. He was riding old Ginger, and even the big, tall, quite tall and heavy set. And he had to take his feet out of the stirrups to keep him from getting wet. But the water was all down through the corral, so he got his feet wet anyway. But he took care of his horse, and then he came into the house. And the look of relief was on his face, because the baby and the mama were doing fine. And he was so happy because he had had that feeling that he must get home to health because he was needed very badly. And then I went to take Bertie home. And we couldn't go out in the street because the water was so deep. So we had to go up to Mama's garden and into the partition fence, which is made out of fence posts. And we squeezed through them to get through so we could go on up. We had to go on up to the corner and turn due south again to get Bertie home. So then I came back and Mama and Doris had decided to stay with us because down that way they had just had quite a flood too. And the water, when it came down out of one canyon, it came down out of another canyon and spread over on the north side of the town while this flood came down from the south on the Box Canyon and Bear Flat. And everything went well from then on.
Okay, now just a minute. Can I insert my feelings here?
Uh-huh.
Like you said, you put me to bed.
Yeah.
And I didn't know a thing about this. And the next morning when I came into the bedroom where Mom was, you know, there's a baby there. I said, where'd he come from? And you told me that it came floating down the flood and it washed up. And I accepted that and played that through till I got older and knew better. Okay, that's about all I have to say about it.
Can I get the whole thing?
Wait a minute. Okay, you get it. Anyway, this is Ray Young back again. I made a couple of boo-boos on the first of the film. I'll just tape rather. And I forgot to say that this is in Salt Lake City. And now, sir, I called you a wrong name. What is your name? What is your name now?
My name now is Clara Marie Young Roberts. And Roberts is my married name. And Raymond here has just said Clara Young.
Uh-huh. All right, now wait a minute. Can you tell us how old you were when Golden came across that land?
Well, I'll have to stop and figure that out.
Yeah, well, all right, then you were young, but what did you think about this baby that was going to come someday?
When Mama first told us that she was pregnant, we were sick to death, but we worried about her because she had always had such times when she was carrying the baby. She'd lost a couple of them. And so as a general rule, she had to go to bed 6 months. But this time, she'd just come right straight through and would have had a bit of...
What did you think? Is going to be somebody intrude in the house or what?
No, we were just keeping the best of the little baby because we hadn't had one for 5 years, and we wanted one awfully bad, and we never expected to have one. This was a great surprise to us, but we were very, very happy about it. We tickled the best.
Oh, you look forward with welcome to our kid, huh?
Huh?
You look forward with welcome toward the new baby.
Yeah, we welcomed the new baby.
Oh.
I don't know how Wilford felt, but Raymond and Clifford were just tickled the best, and he's going to have a little baby. They're like all those kids. Oh, if they could have just a little baby, that was all they wanted.
Okay, can I interject this thought, too? That Wilford's already written down his memory regarding this, and then someday we hope to get this typed up on paper, and then it will be a companion to Wilford's to fill out the story.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's all I have to say. You too? Okay, bye-bye. Tuesday, August the 19th, 1986, at 227 J Street in Salt Lake City, Utah. Clara Young Roberts is seated beside me, and I'm Raymond Young. And just in case the date didn't get on the lead end of this tape, we'll repeat it again. It's Tuesday, August 19th, 1986. And we're about to record some of her memories of her past life. And hoping that our posterity will appreciate them and want them preserved and enjoy them sometime in the future. Oh, all right, now Clara, you told me a story as we sat and talked, and I call it the needle in the haystack. What do you call it?
I call it a needle in the dirty clothes bag.
Okay. All right, then, Clara, you started out telling about life on the San Juan. Now, who lived on the San Juan?
When Pop and Mama got married, they lived on the San Juan in a little town they called Kirtland. Now it is Fruitland. Now it is called Kirtland. And the river ran right close to Grandpa's house. And Papa got malaria fever, and he was sick so much of the time that in talking to the doctor told him the only way he'd ever be cured from malaria fever was to move to a drier climate. So my mother's father, living at Blue Water, New Mexico, where it was dry and sometimes pretty hot and not very many people lived here. So Grandpa told Papa, if he'd move over here to Blue Water.
That was Grandpa teaching, Ernest A. Teaching.
Yeah, my grandfather, my mother's father, who was Ernest A. Kitchen. And so Papa decided that would be best. And of course, it was Mama. She was tickled to death because she had lived in Blue Water a few years, and she liked it up there. Of course, naturally, her parents living there, she was more determined than ever to move back to Blue Water. So, in the fall, where I was born, they moved back to Blue Water. And Papa had made a little two-room lumber house on the lot where they was to live. And here, they set up housekeeping. But in the spring, when they had the farm, Mama would go down and help Papa on the plant his garden, or plant his field, his corn and his different things that he had to plant in his field. And I would stay with my grandmother.
Now this was because Papa was sick with the malaria.
Yeah. And Papa, that was because Papa had malaria and he was pretty weak and he wasn't able to do anything very much by himself. And Mama was strong and young, and she felt so good because she was living there again with her parents, B.A. Kitchen and her mother, Emma C. Kitchen. They let Grandma take care of me when Mama had to work in the field. The first year went around without much to do, or much to say about, talk about. And
you were just a baby of 18 months.
And when I got 18 months old, why, I was, that was in the fall, and I was staying with Grandma again, and Grandma let me, I was like all children, I always wanted to drink a water, and instead of drinking it, I would spill it down in front of my dress and get it all wet, and of course, Grandma never thought much about it, and she wouldn't change me every time I got my dress wet. So during the winter, I got sick. I had the typhoid. And when I got over the typhoid, I got pneumonia. And I was sick for about a year. It took me about a year to get over this sick spell. And about 4 years later, we had done this every spring and every fall, me staying with Mama. And this is 4 years later, this happened. I was there with Grandma again, and when she washed, she spread her clothes all out on the floor to sort them out. And she just had a little old rub board and a tub to do her washing with her, so she didn't take pains and pile them, making them in piles. And so one day I ran across these dirty clothes. I was barefooted, and I was playing with Grandma, and she always was so good to me, and visited with me, and as I ran across the dirty clothes, I stepped on a needle. She had been patching some overalls and forgotten left her needle, which was a darning needle, in some pants that I stepped on. And this went up in my heel. Well, it had gone so far we couldn't see it. It hurt me very bad.
Couldn't see it and get hold of it either.
Uh-huh, we couldn't see it or get hold of it. And I went along that way for quite a while because we didn't have doctors around there in that part of the country in those early days. And people got sick, we generally had a midwife or a nurse or somebody that knew a little bit about medicine. But every year, there was no German doctor would come through in a covered wagon, and he would take care of all our ills and different things. Everybody went to him to talk to him, and he even performed some surgery that wasn't serious, but it had to be done. So Mama and Papa took me to him and told him about the needle in my foot. And there was a little imprint there, and he said, oh, that's where it is, right there. So he took his instrument and probed up in there, and sure enough, that was it. He got a little piece of needle on his instrument. But he said he knew he hadn't got all of it, but he figured that it would come back. Instead of going back up my leg like it was going, it would turn, come backwards and come out. So there wouldn't be any danger in it. And but I couldn't walk. I'd go around on a tiptoe, and it hurt my leg very much because just walking on my toes. So when the May Day came, we always, in Blue Water, we always celebrated May Day. It was one of our most enjoyable times of the year. And we had all young children under a certain age braid what we call the maypole. We had three different colors, and we had to go in and out and in and out and braid it. From the time they got down from the top to the bottom, it was really pretty.
Okay, unless you're running, I'll just change mine quickly.
And my leg hurt me so bad and my heel that I couldn't help roll it.
Now, you were just telling us there how they were braiding the maypole pole, and you wanted to help, but you couldn't because of your sore foot.
Uh-huh. And so Papa hitched up the team on the wagon and took Mama and I over to the church
where they were having the program so that we could watch. And after the program, naturally we just went home. But Wilford, he stayed and had a lovely time.
Now this went on all summer long, didn't it?
And all summer long.
We left around all summer long.
All summer long. I couldn't do much of anything, and when they had the 4th of July and the 24th, all I could do was look on. Mm-hmm. And I felt so bad about it because I was one of these children that happened.
This is the end of side one. Fast forward to the end and turn it over for the rest of the story.
I enjoyed it. I was happy and contented, and my mother would help me. But as fall came, our berries in the mountains was ripening. We did what every fall, all the people in Blue Water went up on the mountain to gather berries. Those days we didn't have any orchards or berry patches or anything in town because we were always short of water. So we didn't have them, so we'd all go up on the mountain and gather berries. And my father always went up the mountain quite a bit to, just to, for his own sake, for interest that he had in the mountains. And he knew where all the berries were and all the bush patches were, so he would be the leader. Well, this time we all went up in the mountains. And we went up in the mountains and parked by what we call the bare street. And there was a trough there that the people had put, or the Forest Service had put there, so the wild animals could come and drink out of the trough. And there was bears and lions and any kind of animal, wild animal that lives in the hills, and then the horses and cattle all came to this spot to drink. But we camped there. It was nice, and the animals weren't mean. And so when we'd all go out into the mountains and pick berries, Papa would lead the whole group. And they had Mama, Papa took a horse along with them for me to ride. His name was Ribbon, and he was very gentle and kind. And I could do anything I wanted to on him. Of course, I had to stay on him because I couldn't get off and on, but that way I could keep up with the folks and not have to stay in camp alone. And one day, it hurt me so bad, and I didn't think about telling anybody about it. I just wanted to go with Mama and Papa and follow them around. And I got off my horse, and of course I couldn't walk, so I'd have to crawl. And I'd just crawl around, and Mama would try to be around where I was at, but I would cry and whine and stuff like old kids. Little kids do. And everybody thought I was the biggest boobie they ever saw. And they didn't hesitate in telling me that either. But I didn't pay any attention to them. So when it got to one evening, Mama got Elder Neal, who was staying with us, to take me on my horse, on Ribbon. And I got on behind him, behind Brother Elder Neal. And he took me to camp. And Elder Neal got off the horse first. And then he was going to lift me off. And he noticed I always wore a stocking. And he noticed on that stocking, the bottom of my foot was rounding, way out, standing out. And he knew that I'd had that needle in my heel. So he very carefully moved my stocking, and there it was, sticking way out. And he grabbed it right quick and pulled it so that it wouldn't go back in my heel, which it was trying to do. And he pulled it out, and all the pus and the blood and everything that came with it, infection, was awful. And so when Mama and Papa and the crowd came, he showed them a needle that had come out of my heel. And then everybody felt sorry because they had complained about me being such a big baby. They said they didn't blame me for crying and fussing because they knew my leg was sore. And, of course, Papa knew a lot about vegetation and about herbs and things, and so he gathered up a few herbs what he was afraid it would cause me trouble and get infection in it. And
they
have
all the blood poison notes and
blood poison stuff. And so they decided they'd sit up after supper, they would sit up with me the rest of the night and watch me, because there was a doctor about 20 miles from us, and if I got too bad, they could take me to him. And so they administered to me. And then all the old folks sat around my bed and talked and told stories. And Mama sat at my head and put cold water rags on my head to keep my head from hurting so bad and to help break the fever. We didn't have any medicine with us at all of any kind, and all we had was the herbs Papa was able to gather that night before it got too dark. And the young folks, we had a lot of them. They played kick-a-can and run sheepy run all night long. And everybody was so concerned about me that about 4 o'clock in the morning, my fever broke and everybody went to bed. But of course, this broke up our berry hunting and everybody went home.
Okay, Father, that's fine. Now then, suppose we discuss a couple of points of interest that might be interesting to folks who listen to this tape. I wondered, as we went through, who Elder Neal was.
Elder Neal was a missionary, and his home was in Spanish Fork, Utah. But he was filling a mission in the western states, which took it. And he was assigned to stay in Blue Water to teach the gospel. He had a companion. I have forgotten his name. But they come and stayed with us in Blue Water. We had an extra room there we could let them have. And then Papa had built a mission. He was very interested in it. And so we kept Elder Neal and his companion there at the house.
And then, wait a minute, don't shut it off yet. How long did you carry this needle in your foot?
I carried this needle in my foot at least 6 months. It was in early, about April, I guess, when I stepped on it. And then it was, this year happened in September. And it was all this time that I had that needle in my foot. And it was sure bad.
All right, that's good, okay. Okay, Clara, that was a nice story. Now then, you've got another story for us that's faith-inspiring, and like the other one, I'm going to call it a loss on a horse. Is that all right?
It's all right. That's where I was.
Okay, then, before you start out telling us about how old you are this time, when this happened, and what time of year and everything like that.
This was, again, for all the people in town went out in the mountains to pick berries. We had, every fall, that's what we did, because we needed the food in the wintertime. And the dry berries that we picked were just, they made such good jellies and jam. And we had raspberries, we could go with strawberries, and different other kind of fruits that Papa knew about in the mountains that grew wild. And so everybody was interested in it. So again, in September, we all went up to the mountains to get the berries and choke cherries. Oh, they were a lot of those, and they make such good juice.
Put in my recollection wild gooseberries. I went on a few of these berry picking things too. They hadn't gone out of fashion by the time I came along either. And they were grew on a gooseberry bush that looked very much like our present gooseberry bushes. But when these mountain gooseberries got ripe, they turned from green to red. They had thorns on them. That's why most people couldn't make use of them. They didn't know how, but some people picked them with gloves, and others of us would just reach up above the berry and pull down, and all the thorns would be pressed down, laid down by the pulling on them, and we pull them off, and then the same way we hold them to our mouth if we wanted to eat one right there, and we just bite off the tip of the thing, and then we squirt the ripe gooseberry into our mouth, and they were sweet and delicious, and those were great times. Okay, now go ahead. You're about how old then?
I was about 10 or 11. I don't recall this exactly, but I was about 10 or 11 because I was quite small and I couldn't get on a horse. So I had to have people help me.
Did I interrupt you, Dan?
Yeah.
You were speaking about bears springing like that. I remember that bears knew how to eat these berries. They put their mouth over them and pulled back, and then they could squeeze the juice out into their mouths, and they were good at it. And there were several people saw the bears as they were picking, and of course it always scared them, and the bears got scared of people, and there was a separation right now. Okay, do an interruption.
The bears and different other animals like these briarberries, as we call, or gooseberries, as much as we did. And they knew how to get the meat out of the berry without getting the stickers in them. And so we always had to watch out for the other animals because they were out picking berries too. And we all enjoyed those briarberries especially because they were so sweet and full of taste that we enjoyed them so much. And everybody would get them.
Now, the wild strawberries and wild raspberries were not so thick, were they?
They're not very thick, but
when
they were very good, and quite a few of them. We had quite a few.
And choke cherries were abundant.
Choke cherries were everywhere, and they're a little kind of a bear, kind of a cherries, but they were sour. Sour, they like to choke your stuff when you eat them. But they were very easy to pick.
And they were best for jams and jellies and
Oh, we always liked them. My folks were just crazy about them. Well, everybody that tasted them. And even today, if they can get any choke cherries, juice, wise, those cherries, they was after them because they make such a lovely jelly. Well, I was about 10 or 11 years old, and I couldn't get off and on a horse by myself. I'd have to have somebody saddle my horse, and then either help me on, or I'd have to get on a box or something and boost myself up. And,
Let me ask a question, huh? Now, this time, who was along with this crowd of people who were berry picking?
Everybody in town went, and especially Mama's baby sister, Doris, and her friend, Olea Nielsen.
How old was Doris?
They were five and 6 years older than I was.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted to go ride the horses, and I wanted to go with them. And so Papa told Doris that if he would let her and Olea have a horse apiece to go riding on, if I could go with them. And so they said, all right. But when they got started, I couldn't ride as fast as they could, so they liked to ride, run races, and do silly things on their horse. And I couldn't do them, so they got me to go back and join Papa and Mama in the group. Well, when I got back where they had left us, they had gone off, and I couldn't find them. And I went up and down this trail on the mountain side of the mountain,
trying to find the group of people.
Trying to find Papa and the group of people that were out picking berries. And I couldn't do it, so I thought, well, I'll go on down the trail and go to camp. But as I went down, I missed the trail that went to camp. I didn't know the country enough to know. And I had to go to Bear Springs, and I couldn't find the road, so the trail was on the mountain. It went right alongside the canyon, right down into Blue Water after
several miles while you came into Blue Water. And I'd always heard if you turn a horse, let a horse have a rein, why, she'd go back home where her baby was. So I didn't want to go back to Blue Water. I wanted to go to camp.
Well, then, of course, you've been up and you're doing all right. Don't shut it off. You had gone up and down this trail several times.
Well, from now on, I had gone back up and forth. When I thought this.
And couldn't find them, okay.
And I couldn't find them, so I went up and down that trail along the side of the mountain. And I knew that there was wildcats and bears just down in this canyon, because I had seen the bears, and they always followed the berry patches, and because they liked those berries as well as the people did. And lots of times you'd find where they had been, and these briar, where they had eaten these briar berries, and all the stickers was there, but they had eaten the insides of them. So I was kind of scared, and we went up and down this this canyon, and finally it dawned on to me that